Hi, I'm Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times. Reproductive health has been a major topic in the U.S. over the last few years, particularly since the Supreme Court removed the constitutional right to abortion in the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health case in June of 2022. Pharmacists have been caught in the middle, with many questions and a lot of confusion surrounding what they're allowed to do versus what they owe their patients. To get some answers, I spoke with a few experts. In this episode, you'll hear a conversation with Ron Lanton, partner at Lanton Law, who gets us up to speed on all of the legal cases surrounding this issue thus far. Wonderful. So 2022 seems like forever ago, but it was actually just last year. So take us back to the top, the Dobbs decision in June, and kind of what got us to that point.
I think what got us here was the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973. Since then, we saw the anti-abortion movement that was set in motion. And I think personally that was capped by the appointment of Justice Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. This appointment gave the conservatives a very strong majority on the court to overturn Roe. And it wasn't just the Dobbs decision. When you look back at a lot of the precedent that had happened before on some of these ancillary issues around abortion, that's where Roe was being chipped away, you know, for a long time. So it was just once she became an associate justice, it was, okay, what's the right case to bring now since we've kind of set all these things in motion? And that's the result that we've seen. So obviously, with the Dobbs decision, when you go back and look at that, because that seems like it was a while back as well, that was due to the fact that the state of Mississippi had banned abortions at 15 weeks, which was pre-viability. And then, of course, viability referring to if a fetus can survive outside the womb. So when Dobbs, we had Roe versus Wade and also Casey versus Planned Parenthood. Those were both overturned by the Supreme Court on the basis that abortion at any time was not protected by the Constitution. So basically, the court ruled that states could ban abortion at any time as long as the states controlled the outcome. So that's kind of how we've come to this point right now.
Wonderful. Can you kind of give some idea of how such a big shift could occur, particularly given precedent, and there's a lot of public support for abortion access. So how does such a big change actually happen?
Very, very slow motion. I don't think it could be pointed to one thing was the direct cause of it, right? Because, I mean, as long as I've been alive, I mean, it's been Roe versus Wade. That's been the precedent that we've been living by. And I think that's what's been so shocking, because you've had a Supreme Court decision, and Supreme Court decisions are not overturned overnight. I mean, they take a long, long time to do. And it's something that's just so polarizing, you know, in our country. You know, normally the Supreme Court makes a decision and that's that. You don't see it for another generation. So I'm not sure if it was, you know, a generation's come back now or not, but I think the political currents just happen to favor the Dobbs decision and just the makeup and how things just happen. So I don't think you could point to one thing, but like I mentioned earlier, the Trump administration reshaped the Supreme Court with three appointments. And then you also had aggressive legislation from anti-abortion states who unsurprisingly started to target contraception access, and they made this kind of an all-encompassing issue. So I think that's how we've gotten where we are, even though you're right, there has been large public support for abortion and contraceptive access. It's just the climate. That's the other thing I wanted to kind of touch on. Most people forget the Supreme Court is a third branch of government. You know, they think, oh, well, it's a justice and they're neutral. No, they're not, you know, especially when it comes to the Supreme Court. So when that third branch of government acts like a third branch of government, I think that's another thing that surprises people, that it's not just a very black and white thing, because it never is with them.
Yeah, absolutely. What were the kind of immediate effects of the decision, especially for pharmacists?
I think it confused some pharmacists about what their responsibilities to patients were. When Dobbs was issued, you saw a lot of the anti-abortion states that were more emboldened on the agenda of trying to cut this down, while the Biden administration took a few administrative measures to preserve the status quo. So, for example, the Attorney General released a statement about women and how they must be able to travel freely to another state to seek the medical care that they need, and that was going to be the same thing. So they wanted to kind of preserve status quo about that. We also saw President Biden direct the Secretary of Health and Human Services to protect women's access to critical medicines for reproductive care that were approved by the FDA. So mifepristone, things that you and I have talked about over the past, they just kind of reiterated their support and said, this was passed for this, and if you need it, we're going to make sure that it's there. So it seems as though pharmacy was caught in between this long-standing conflict between state and federal government, and it just so happened to be a very, very personal issue, a very, very polarizing issue at the same time, but one where people do need to get their health care, and it just kind of put them on the front lines of that.
Yeah, definitely. How have you seen pharmacists handle that confusion, particularly in restrictive states where they really are caught in the middle?
Yeah, it really comes down to where the pharmacist is located. That's key. We've counseled many pharmacies to simply monitor their respective boards of pharmacy, as well as the board of medicine. That's something they normally don't watch because they're not physicians, but at the same time, because of what was happening with the Supreme Court and what's happening on some of these state levels with policy when it comes to what a physician can do. I mean, some of these physicians are really nervous about, are they going to be able to lose their license or go to jail or, some really serious things that can happen. So just to kind of stay ahead of the game, and in addition to the Board of Pharmacy, we've also told them to take a look at the Board of Medicine and just call over and ask some questions, especially, if they did, some kind of collaborative agreement or whatever it was that they were doing. They at least saw how the Board of Medicine was regulating that. So look to to those two places for guidance. We also told pharmacists to watch the FDA, but as we were kind of having this discussion, it was just like, man, they may be getting conflicting information and you just don't know. And if that's the case, then we said, all right, unfortunately you may have to go to an attorney and see what you're comfortable with doing, because that's where we are right now with this type of policy.
Definitely. What were the kind of unintended effects of this decision for things like mifepristone access? Especially, there are some needs that are other than abortion, so access to these drugs was complicated for other patients as well.
Well, mifepristone isn't just for abortion. I think people don't really know about that. I mean, there's things like Cushing's disease. It's in clinical trials now for all different types of cancers, like brain cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. I think there's alcoholism that they're looking at, traumatic stress disorder, depression. Those are all these other conditions that mifepristone can help with. And I think what's happening is that the access to treating those underlying diseases, or maybe something off-label that a physician may or may not do that we don't know about, would be in question because of this political lens that this drug is being viewed through. So it's a shame because there's still an underlying need to resolve all these other issues. And it should not be, hey, this drug is only for this thing and that's it, and we can't do anything else. I think that's too rigid of a view. So it has definitely thrown some things into question, especially the patients that need this type of drug to handle whatever it is that they're facing.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, there was a lot of confusion, especially in those first few months after the decision. Have any of these questions been answered or clarified now that we're give or take 16 months out?
You would think 16 months would make things a lot more clear, right? Normally they would, but unfortunately, with this situation and the nuances that are around it, unfortunately, no. There are too many pending court decisions, especially from the Fifth Circuit, where I know you and I have had some discussions in the past about the Fifth Circuit and what that's going to mean to contraception and things like that. But this issue, the Fifth Circuit decision is in front of the U.S. Supreme Court right now, as well as some others that are pending that are trying to be heard in front of the court. So I think we're far from getting any certainty on it. I think no matter what, this is just going to be one of those issues that just keeps going.
Yeah, definitely. Can you kind of draw the line or tell us how states and legislators have drawn the line between abortion and contraception, and how are these things being linked?
Are we looking at this through the Dobbs
Yeah, like
lens?
how are we getting from Dobbs to the contraception issues that we're seeing now?
Yeah, it's a complicated question because these are two separate policy issues that have become intertwined, right? And I think it's just there's a lot of different reasons for that. I don't know if I really want to get into all of that, but I will say that that's what it's become. I'm going to answer that with it does and it doesn't. I think it doesn't because it doesn't really address contraception or overturn any precedent around that. I just think it's created an environment that encourages those who oppose contraception to take a more emboldened policy approach to try to limit it. So that's it's become very mismatched. but that's where we are.
Yeah, that's where we've been for quite a while, it seems. Have there been any legislative efforts to restrict contraception, or is this mostly kind of discussion at this point?
I think a lot of it is discussion at this point. Most of the policy has been around restricting abortion access from the states that have been trying to do it. For me, looking at it as a policy person, that's kind of like the next arena. The contraception has been the next arena because it's kind of like it, but it's not the same issue, but it's that's kind of the next logical step we can see as the next battleground. So I haven't really seen anything monumental from the states. I have seen on the federal level, Senator Markey, he's joined with a few other senators in the United States Senate. He's joined with Congresswoman Kathy Manning from North Carolina. And they actually reintroduced the Right to Contraception Act. And this bill would codify and strengthen the right to contraception, which the Supreme Court first recognized, well, it's almost more than half a century ago, when you think about it, through Griswold versus Connecticut. So it's you know I it's it's we've just kind of seen this more so in the limelight of what do we do in reaction to Dobbs than anything else in the opposite perspective.
Interesting. You kind of just answered this, so we can skip it. Let me know. Have there been federal level efforts to ensure contraception access, and kind of what has happened with these?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll just recap. So we've had that bill that I just spoke about in Congress that was introduced by Senator Markey and Congresswoman Manning. And then you've had a really strong reactive response from the current administration, from the Biden administration. So that just tells me that, this is one of those issues that there's just such strong feelings on either side that no matter what, the other side is not going to be satisfied with what's happened. So, like I said, it's just, I'm not sure. I mean, we've had a lot of dynamic things happen, if that's the right word, in the last, couple of years, especially around just COVID and just how, political decisions have been made, in this environment. And no one really expected. I mean, I didn't see, three court appointments, from the last administration. So that really did change a lot of things. And there's always the saying that elections matter. These are, for whatever issue you're looking at, these things, line up one after another, which was kind of an interesting segue into the question that you started this interview with, which was, what's the one point that all this happened? And it's like it's just been a, just a gathering of just small little things over time that have just added up. So,
Yeah, it's just dominoes.
yeah.
In the spring of this year, the FDA authorized a prescription to OTC switch for Opill, a daily contraception pill. So, has the OTC access widened access, or does this OTC option also face opposition?
I'm actually not sure about that. I was really trying to look to see if I saw any statistics about this, and I have not personally been able to find anything about whether access has been widened or not. So, for your listeners, the pharmacy listeners, to this particular podcast, I would be very curious to see if they present you with any statistics because I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it might still be too soon. It's only been a few months. Around the same time in the spring, we had a conversation about an ongoing legal debate. In that case, there was a judge in Texas, kind of whether judges can overturn FDA decisions. In that case, it was mifepristone. Can you give a bit of background and remind us about that issue? Again, it seems so long ago, but it wasn't.
And that's where I was saying, kind of, where are we, where we are right now with things, and there are things that I just never thought we would even be considering, but we are, where now you have a judge that can question whether or not an FDA approval is real. Like, is that, can we just get rid of that? And it's like, wow, what do we do? What does that do to other regulatory decisions that have happened? It just really puts a lot of doubt into things. So yes, let's take a step back. It's been a bit. So let's just kind of talk about what happened recently. So on August 16th of this year, we had a three-judge panel from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, and they actually ruled on the case that was challenging the FDA approval of mifepristone. And it led to the opinion declined to invalidate the original approval of the drug, but it upheld the district court's rejection of more recent decisions by the FDA to expand access to that medication. So when I went back and looked at this, I wanted to see like the best recap that I could get because there were so many twists and turns into this thing. And I found a really good one from the ABA, American Bar Association. And because I'm a lawyer, I just kind of happen to go to the ABA whenever I have things like this. They're very good. So basically, when it comes to them, they were saying that to start this case, the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, and there were a few other plaintiffs that were involved, they actually filed a preliminary injunction against the FDA. And their approval. And I think that was in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Texas. And that was in November of 2022. And that was challenging the initial FDA approval in 2000, as well as the agency's relaxation of safety restrictions in 2016. That was the approval of a generic version of the drug in 2019. And the announcement in 2021 that it would exercise enforcement discretion, that being the FDA, by allowing the drug to be dispensed through the mail. And that's where we saw a whole bunch of stuff in 2021 where people were like, whoa, opponents of the drug. So in April 2023, the district court granted the plaintiff's motion in part by staying the FDA approval of mifepristone and any actions thereafter. And then the Fifth Circuit decision was vacated. That actually, when the Fifth Circuit took a look at this, they vacated the district court's ruling against the FDA's approval of the drug in 2000 on the ground that the challenge was barred by the statute of limitations. So that was a really interesting rationale about how to handle something so loaded, right? The decision also vacated the ruling against the 2019 generic approval because the plaintiffs failed to show that they were hurt by it. It was one of those things about standing and whether or not these guys really had an injury. And that's one of the things that is very important when you bring a law case is you have to have some kind of connection to what you're talking about in order to get into court, which is called standing. So they said some things about that the Fifth Circuit did. But basically, this decision puts on hold the 2016 FDA regulatory changes that would allow women to take the drug later in their pregnancies, and it allowed non-physicians to prescribe the drug. But it would also reverse the ruling would also reverse the litigation in this case regarding the FDA's recent move to allow pills to be dispensed via the mail, because that was the thing about Dobbs. It was like, well, if Dobbs is really trying to restrict access, and let's say that we can't travel 100 miles to the state border, either schedule or we just don't have a car, or we're really scared that we're going to get prosecuted, because that's what some states are talking about. Can we take the safe way through the mail? And that's been this whole state-federal divide about whether or not the federal government can actually send something to a state that has a policy against abortion. So this has just been all over the place, which is why there is no simple solution, nor do I see one.
So, to recap, so mifepristone is still available, but the widened access that the FDA wanted is not in place.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And see, you asked for all of it, and that's all of it. And you know, it's not your fault. It is the fact that we have gone from we really are living in unprecedented times. You know, and like I said, I never thought we would be having a discussion about a trial judge being able, I mean, one judge, right, being able to question whether or not something from that was deemed safe from the FDA, should we be taking this? You know, regardless of what it is, just look at it from, you know, just a drug, you know, just, you know, antibiotics or anything. I mean, what's to stop that? You know, if this would have happened. So it's been very complicated, very long, and I think that was a great way to sum it up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that statement applies to our entire conversation. If you could give kind of one key takeaway for pharmacists with all of these kind of intertwined, complicated issues, what would it be?
One thing for pharmacists. Well, that Fifth Circuit case is going back up to the Supreme Court. And I think we had talked about before that no matter what, which way they ruled, it was going back up to the Supreme Court. So I would say definitely watch the Supreme Court. Okay. I think that whatever happens up there, if you're for or against abortion, there is going to be a reaction. And I think you just have to see what your particular state is going to do. I also think that we're going to see a reaction no matter what from the administration. So again, you know, it would be nice if we had a decision and that was it, and we can kind of rest with, all right, this is it. And you know, there shouldn't be that's kind of what people take comfort in when they have stare decisis. That's another legal term about, okay, this is, you know, this is precedent and this is what it is, and we could just kind of move on. We had our fight, and now if we want to change it, we're going to start the very long process of trying to do something else in the states. And that's exactly, it's the same, this is the same path that abortion took. It just so happened because it was abortion. It was just such a politically charged, such an emotional issue. That is getting such scrutiny, and it's affecting so many women, you know, and not just women. I mean, it's affecting everybody. It's affecting the whole family. You know, it just depending on where you're at. So, watch the boards of pharmacy medicine. Watch the Supreme Court. Watch the administration. No different than what we've been doing last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Was there anything you want to add? Anything that we didn't touch on?
I don't think there's anything we didn't touch on. I think your questions were very good because even though the abortion issue and the contraception issue are two different issues, I think that's what I want to lay, you know, leave this meeting of stressing the most about. Not that I'm trying to convince the listeners that yes, there is a difference, because everyone knows there is a difference, but policy-wise, they have just become joined at the hip. And that's where I think a lot of things could go wrong. It just depends on how states want to craft certain pieces of legislation and what are they really after. And I think that there is definitely a an environment that is rife with unintended consequences. And I think that, you know, no matter how you feel about the issue, when you're sitting down to legislate it, you know, understand why and just take a look at what could possibly happen.
Thank you for listening to the first episode in this special limited series from the Pharmacy Focus podcast. Tune in November 22nd for another great conversation in this series.